At this point, the world can be split into two different types of people. There are the gamers and there are the non-gamers. There's actually a fairly large component of people who've never played a video game, let alone a massively multiplayer online role-playing game. And many of them still, at this point, think that gaming or gamers is sort of a niche thing, kind of a cult going on of this small group of people sitting in their underwear playing video games in their mom's basement. Turns out, that's really not the case, and it's time for reality to catch up with the...
You can be fully clothed, actually, and play games.
That's not actually true. You have to be unclothed. But I'm joking. But Jane McGonigal joins us now. She's the director of games at the Institute for the Future, author of Reality is Broken, Why Games Make Us Better and How They Can Change the World. And may I suggest to all of you to take a look at her TED Talk. You can take a look at it on YouTube. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning.
You know, the thing that interests me about your book is for people who don't game, they don't understand that there's any kind of really constructive value to video games. They see it as a waste of time. They see it as, why don't you get a real life? And what you really say in this book is that's a completely old-fashioned way of thinking. And in fact, non-gamers, it's a shrinking population, are going to be at a disadvantage in, say, 5, 10, 15 years.
It's true. We have this idea that playing games is a waste of time, but actually a decade of recent scientific research shows that playing games is actually one of the most productive ways you can spend your time, because you're producing a very powerful set of positive emotions and social relationships that not only can change your life, but can actually give you the power to change the world.
And in your book goes through a number of games that actually make, I mean, your book is called Reality is Broken, and what you're suggesting is that we use video games because they engage human beings to make us better human beings in reality as well as virtual. I mean, there's a ton of examples. The military obviously uses video games to a large extent, and it's been an incredible recruiting tool for them. But some of these others are fascinating, the way that some surgeons who play video games are actually less likely to make mistakes than those who don't.
Mm-hmm.
While
they're
actually operating?
No video games while you're operating. That would be bad. But, yeah, what we're seeing is that games produce this optimism, this more willingness to be resilient in the face of failure. You set higher goals for yourself. You're more likely to help others and collaborate. And so there are people trying to make games that actually have real problems embedded in them, problems like coming up with new medicines to treat cancer or social actions to end poverty or global hunger. And these are games that ordinary gamers can play and be connected to real world-changing efforts.
Well, Google and IBM, other companies have used games to get the public to get their work done for them. But the thing that's really interesting is the number of truly successful people. You cite a statistic in your book that 61% of CEOs and executives take daily breaks at work to play video games.
Yeah, and you know, the number one reason they cite for doing that is that playing games at work makes them feel more productive, which is a super crazy thing to say. But then when you dig deeper, it turns out that a 5-minute game where we are successful builds up our confidence, builds up our optimism, and then studies show that we're more likely to be successful in a meeting, in a negotiation, in a sales call. So just 5 minutes of gaming can actually boost our confidence for the rest of the day.
You talk about games in which people have to spend a huge amount of time doing some very, very difficult and complicated things. And you call them unnecessary obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
And your question is, how come we can't get reality to work the same way? How come we can't motivate human beings to work that hard in real life as they will in video games? And some of these aren't mindless things like Tetris. Some of these are very complicated tasks that people perform for no real world benefit.
Yeah, you know, we call it an engagement gap at the Institute for the Future. This idea that there's this huge divide between the kinds of complex tasks that we're given in really massively multiplayer online games, where we have to collaborate with hundreds of other people and everybody has a specific skill or talent that they bring to the team, but really complex coordination. And then we show up at our workplaces or we show up at school and, you know, it's more solitary, it's less creative, it's less complex real-time collaboration. And that engagement gap is something we really want to fill, because people are showing that they have a desire to tackle much more challenging obstacles, and they have the collaboration skills. We just need for reality to catch up with the kinds of tasks they're being asked to do online.
Well, Jane McGonigal has all kinds of suggestions and real-world examples of how reality is beginning to catch up with the virtual world. Jane McGonigal, Director of Games at the Institute for the Future and author of the new book, Reality is Broken, Why Games Make Us Better and How They Can Change the World. Thanks so much, Jane.
Sure, my pleasure.
Reality catching up with games. Reality is certainly in a race with something. More voices from Egypt. Here's part of a conversation we had on our new podcast with Egyptian protester Adam Forer. A wave of change, the push for democracy in the Arab world. Listen to his voice here.
Adam, you sound tired. I mean, you sound exhausted.
I'm really tired. On Friday I collapsed because of my lungs just couldn't take the tear gas anymore, you know? My body is extremely exhausted. Every day I've been going down and rallying and moving from place to place and in some cases running and dodging bullets. And I saw people die because of bullets I saw them take. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous what they're doing to us. 300 people in a week, just like that, just for one man not to step down. I mean, there's so much thoughts in my head right now after what I've seen today. I could not imagine when I saw on my way to Tahrir, when I saw people rallying pro Mubarak, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe this was happening. I don't know what he did. Are they the same people that he paid and bribed to vote for the NDP in the parliamentary elections in November? I mean, what's going on? It's like I'm looking at a different Egypt. I can't believe it.
Adam Forer speaking yesterday about the events he's witnessed over the last 9 days in his country. Subscribe or download to Wave of Change, the push for democracy in the Arab world. You can find it on iTunes or at thetakeaway.org. And we always want to hear your thoughts on all of our coverage or anything you hear on the program. 1-877-8-MY-TAKE. Go to thetakeaway.org, find out how you can join the conversation. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.